Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and poisoning cases from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 50.
50, that's a good number. I failed miserably because last week we did say something about, oh, let's do something exciting, and I'm not on anything exciting, so.
Well, surely your story is excitement enough, Nick.
No. This is, I purposely chose a very boring story.
It's a very boring poisoning story. Well, we have gotten to 50 episodes. 50 goddamn episodes.
That's pretty mad. We dreamt this up in the pub one evening. Okay, let's do that.
But 50 episodes. I'm very proud of us.
Yeah, that's very good.
You said there wouldn't be more than 20 episodes in this.
I didn't think we'd get past like three, to be perfectly honest with you.
Look how many people poisoned the shit out of each other. As we always say, poison is the greatest poison of them all.
Oh, it is. It does. Yes, it is, actually. Have we ever said that?
We have now.
Yes. So as we always say for the first time.
Obviously, 50 is a landmark number, but we did talk about this after Nick said, I shall do something exciting last week. And then we calmed him down and we had a chat. But we are going to plan something for episode 52 because that will be 1 year. 1 year.
I think that's appropriate celebrationing.
No idea what we're going to do. Send your suggestions in.
Oh, more cake.
Cake.
Oh, cake, podcast cake. Death.
Oh, maybe we could do like a bake-off. Everyone could do a bake-off and, like, post your pictures. Bug it, why not?
Poison-themed cakes. Intriguing.
Well, there we are. Well, there we are. How are you, Nick?
I'm fine. Sorry, you asked me that question just as I was taking a massive glug of Negroni. I'm fine.
So things are going well. Let's conclude. Any poisonings this week, Nick?
I don't know. I'm going to go with yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. 50
well,
episodes
breaks,
in, finally.
Breaks up a bit, absolutely. I mean, I feel like I've learnt enough and I've taken enough notes over the year, pretty much.
Just leaving bodies in your wake.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going for it.
I like it. I really do hope that your neighbours or the Airbnb owners don't listen to this podcast because we did see them today when I knocked on your door to pick up my special delivery and someone just put their head at the door and went, oh, I thought my door was knocking. And we're like, yeah, we shouldn't talk to you. We say terrible things about you on air. But she's alive, at least you've not killed her.
Got through it, survived.
Well, you know, speaking of neighbours that we don't want to poison and people that we talk shit about on air, I think it's time for us to thank our Patreon subscribers.
I mean, you're really encouraging people to join, really, aren't you?
That's why
people
they do
it. People we don't
it.
Want to poison and we talk shit about them. Step on up, really.
Exactly. No, good shit. Nice shit.
Nice shit. Well, we do indeed love you. So, I mean, we have to say thank you. A huge thank you to Fiona Kroshuk.
And to Mia Lindberg Jorgensen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, darlings.
You're very, very sexy. You're lovely. A very, very international audience.
Oh, well, yeah, that's very true,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. Good
yeah,
Patreons.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm liking that.
Yeah, sexy names.
You say international. They're probably from the same town as us.
Probably. But they've just got sexier names.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, I want to praise their names. Mia, are you related to the Lindberg baby? Are you the Lindberg baby?
I'm going to go with no.
No. Yeah. That would be too much to ask. But if she was, it would be like, oh, we did solve a crime on the podcast by accident. We'd be famous.
And I'm going to say this now. We have never at any point set out to solve any sort of crime, make any sort of factual attempts or insights into any of these things. We tell stories and get drunk.
Exactly. Up and vanished we are not.
Indeed not.
But someday. Maybe.
Indeed not.
Maybe by accident, purely by drunken accident.
If anything happened, it would be entirely accidental.
Which is the best kind of crime solving, I think.
Is it really?
The nation would be 100% behind us. Two people got drunk and solved a crime. Yay! They're all of us. Well, Nick. Yes. Are you ready?
Probably.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison?
Oh, it's my episode, so I can't really get out of it.
Yeah, or we could drink poison and talk about cocktails. Yeah, episode 50.
No, I'll change it up, episode 50.
Yeah. How boring is your story?
Well, you'll find out, won't you?
All right, well, we'll decide halfway through.
306 pages.
Delightful. It is Nick's story this week. Hooray, hooray, hooray. But as we've established, we can't possibly tell a story without a cocktail in hand. And I'm excited for a cocktail tonight, actually. Yeah, no, I'm up for this. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell and will flavour our cocktail of the week. Nick's story, so he got to choose the secret ingredient this week.
I did. I thought I was quite pleased with this one. I thought this is a good ingredient.
The ingredient is...
is tears.
Tears.
Sorrow and despair.
It's lockdown. Everyone 100% has that in their house.
Just buckets full. Just lying around.
There are people listening to this crying in the bath going, oh, finally, I feel useful now. Tears. Okay, good. I'll let you get away with this one as it's not a traditional ingredient.
Thank you. You're so very kind.
Oh, no, I like it. It's lyrical.
How generous you are.
I will let you get away with it. I am a little bit worried. Reassurance, people, when I did collect my secret cocktail ingredients from Nick, as I do each week in lockdown, he didn't punch me in the face in order to procure tears from me. They're not my tears. If there's tears in this cocktail, then none of mine. Unless...
Well, you didn't see my housemates either, so...
Oh, God, no, I didn't, actually. I heard wailing. Maybe that's why the neighbour next door was coming out and going, what the fuck is going on in there?
That could have been it.
Or we're going to mix this up and you're going to say something and I'm going to sob into a glass.
We have equal potential for both things.
Yeah, I mean, that's happened before, to be fair, you know.
That happens most weeks.
You can be very cruel. So with tears, then, as a secret ingredient... I shudder to ask, what have you come up with?
Well, it is a... Well, I'm hoping it's going to be delightful.
Ooh, okay.
None of these sorrowful, despair-filled tears. We are going to have a tears of joy.
Oh, a tears of joy. Oh, that's a cocktail. Oh, I've never heard of
cocktail.
That.
No, indeed not.
So the tears of joy.
Now, I'm quite intrigued. A few people on the social media. The social media have been commenting, going, what could it be? What could it be? And you all got it wrong.
Well, yeah, I was kind of hopeful because someone wrote in that, is it a smoky tears with
there's yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I did like, come across that
please
one.
Please let it be that. Oh, let it be that.
But then I thought, I think, well, I could make a cocktail that I know Sinead will like. Or...
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 you can torment me.
I went with the or.
Oh, good. Okay, good, good.
Also, because
lovely.
That other cocktail had many things that I had never heard of before. so...
What, love and kindness? Is that what it had in it?
Yes. And?
Well, good. The tears of joy that you've chosen specifically to upset me. Great. Excellent. I'm so looking forward to this.
No, I think you'll love it.
Oh, okay. Good, good, good. Okay. Well, it's got alcohol in it, so I'm excited. As we're in lockdown, Nick has produced a little batch of secret ingredients for me, but it's time for us to go to our isolation kitchens and shake up a storm, so we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
Ooh, tears of joy.
Tears of joy.
Now, it looks, it bodes well. It's kind of orangey, but also a bit browny.
There's a little bit sort of an orangey, peachy, browny thing going on.
Yeah. Now we know the brown drinks serve as well.
This is true. We have had success with brown drinks.
And it's a hefty drink as well. I'm quite pleased with the quantities that you've given me.
I gave you enough for two. You didn't realise.
Oh, so I shouldn't have served this in a pint glass. No, I'm kidding.
It was not meant to be a pint of cocktail.
No, I gave one to my husband. Sometimes Nick makes me enough for two, then Ben gets one, or I get two if I don't tell Ben that he's made me two.
Depends how much you like the sound of it, really.
So tears of joy. Will I cry tears of joy or tears of sorrow on the taste of it?
Who knows?
So, oh, but we have to dive in, don't we? Can't ask what's in it.
You can't ask what's in it yet.
Okay, right. Okay, cheers.
Yeah, cheers.
Okay. Ooh, that's not unpleasant.
That's actually quite nice.
Yeah, that is. That's surprising. Okay, I'm going to make some guesses here.
What are you getting? What are you getting?
I think I've got orange juice in there. There's something definitely citrusy. Do I detect a hint of cinnamon?
Now, that is one you did know about.
I did know. I think only because you texted me and said, do you have cinnamon syrup? Like I'm some sort of elf in Santa's workshop. And no, of course I don't. So no, there's cinnamon in there. Hint of cinnamon.
Hint of cinnamon.
But yeah, orange juice and...
Come on, you have a few more guesses than that.
Okay. Let me in a second say it, seven it. It's really tasty.
It's good. I'm really surprised by this one, actually. It's really nice.
I'm kind of thinking, almost part of me thinks it's grapefruit juice in there as well, because it's got a sour hint to it. So there's orange juice, grapefruit, cinnamon. It gives a Christmassy feel.
Well, you've got one out of three so far.
Oh, cinnamon.
Yes.
Right. Lemon?
Nope.
Lemon? What the fuck is in here? Lime?
It's got lime.
It's got lime.
It's got lime in it. It's got lime juice.
It's got lime. Oh, I was sure there was orange juice in here. So maybe Galliano?
Nope.
No?
I'm going to put you out of your misery because this could go on a while otherwise.
I don't know what's happening. It's really confusing.
You were heading in the right direction because we have triple sec.
Oh,
so that's where you're getting your orangey.
Why didn't I say that? I'm an idiot.
This is true. But we have spiced rum. As a base, we have a spiced rum, we have a triple sec, lime juice, cinnamon syrup, and a dash of Angostura of bitters.
Wow. Never would have put that together. Never would have thought
intriguing.
That.
So it's sort of got a bit of a take on a daiquiri-ish with a sort of rummy, limey thing, but then obviously a lot of other stuff as well. But yeah, that's good. I like that.
Honestly, I'm really thrown that it's got lime juice in it. The spiced rum, I'm kind of getting now because it's definitely, I mean, honestly, as I said, it's got a Christmassy feel to it because you feel the cinnamon and then the spiced rum would have spices you would find in a cake. But I really feel like there's orange juice in there. It's really refreshing and crisp and nice.
Well, I think that's the combination of the Cointreau and the lime juice. You're getting that citrus hit from the lime juice.
Yeah.
And also the orangey flavour from the Cointreau or triple sec.
It's lovely. It's like a breakfast cocktail. Have some orange juice. This tastes very strong. No, it doesn't, mate.
It's fine. Have it on your cereal. It's all good.
Oh, my God. Tears of joy. That has really thrown me.
Tears of joy.
It's goddamn delicious.
Marvellous. I'm glad you like.
Well, well done. I think lots of people have spiced rum in their...
Well, yeah. It's not a complicated one to make. People will have most of these ingredients. Cinnamon syrup is actually... Because I went out searching for bloody cinnamon syrup and I couldn't find it anywhere. So I came home... I made my own.
Well, how did you make it then?
I used 1 cup of sugar, 1 cup of water, put that in a saucepan, let that dissolve down, and then chucked in about 4 cinnamon sticks.
Ooh, okay, the stick.
The stick, and then just left it for about an hour and a half.
To infuse,
and then strained it out. And that was it. So it takes a bit of time, but it takes no effort, but it's just going to sit there and... do its thing.
But I can imagine cinnamon syrup would be useful in lots of things because
you can have it in your coffee.
You can have it in your coffee. You can have it with certain bourbons as well. I think, is it that Fireball whiskey or something that's got a hint of cinnamon
well,
in
that's,
it?
Well, that's cinnamony anyway. But yeah. I think it would be interesting in a espresso martini instead of your sugar syrup.
Ooh, hint of cinnamon.
That would be interesting.
That will continue our experiments with the espresso martini. You've already put a bit of creme de menthe in one.
Yes.
Which fucking works, guys. Honestly, do it. But cinnamon syrup. Oh, I love it.
I have got a whole bloody bottle of the stuff to use that I've made. So
Yeah. You'll have your spiced rum. Earlier on, I was going to say you have spiced rum and the first thought that came to my head was in your desk. Everyone's got spiced rum in the desk.
This is revealing more of Sinead's life than perhaps it should be out there.
To be fair, I am sitting in my home office when I record this, and I don't even have a desk drawer, so I just have booze scattered around the place.
Not even in a drawer. It's just you're on a Zoom call with Sinead. This is the bottles in the background.
Oh, that's why we got that email round from work saying you need to blur your backgrounds. It was just all the empties.
Oh, slightly side note.
Yeah.
May not make it into the podcast. Did you see that BBC interview?
Which one?
There was a woman from Wales, I think, talking about how it's difficult to work from home and get a routine and all that sort of stuff. And she was sitting in obviously some sort of, I don't know, home office or whatever. And there was a bookcase behind her with a massive great cock on it.
No!
Big old dildo on the bookcase.
What, like an actual sex toy or like a bit of art?
No, actually like a pinky,
silicone-y
looking thing. Quite a hefty one as well.
Well, you get bored at work.
Just in the background and there's a screenshot of it. It's like, oh my God.
Why would you put it on the shelf? to remind yourself to do it? I don't know.
Well, I think it's probably something like for her, like one of her mates bought it as a gag one day sort of thing.
Yeah, that's the story she will tell, definitely.
But everyone else now is going, fucking hell. So yeah, side note.
Oh, that is brilliant.
It made me chuckle. Well, there we go. Moving on.
Moving on. Let's see, the tears of joy have produced
absolutely.
Conversation. Just, they've let the tongue loose. But yes, mix up a tears of joy, guys. The recipe will be up on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, and in our minds later on. Delicious. Well, with our tears of joy firmly in hand.
Yum, yum, yum.
Is it time for a story?
It's time for a story.
Yeah.
Going to take you, I'd say... me and my bluffing of a boring story. Oh, it's an exciting story this week. I was cunningly bluffing you all.
We'll be the judge of that.
You'll be taking notes now and marking me afterwards.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's what I get.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right, so we are, in fact, we're going on a journey. We're going on an exciting journey, and we're going back.
Back.
We're going back a bit. Back a bit. Not too far back, but back a bit.
What, to the 80s?
No, further than that. So this is the point where we have like, those wavy lines going...
And then nothing happens.
And then nothing happens. Then we're like, oh no. It is Tuesday, the 1st of July.
Okay. 1851. Oh, nice. Nice.
So we're going that far back.
Nice. Victorian. Very good. Yes.
Yep. But we are in the French city of Rennes.
Oh, of Rennes. We're going back to France. God, we love the French.
Yeah, all the French love their poisoning.
Shout out to our lovely new fans on Twitter. Who were a bunch of people were writing in French recommending the poisoner's cabinet.
Really? Well, hurrah for you.
Hurrah. Merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup.
Oh, this is going to be desperately insulting, and I do apologise.
Yeah,
for
they actually started writing, and after last week's episode where I was doing the French accent, I was like, I am so sorry.
Yes, I'm very sorry.
Very sorry.
But we meet two serious and stony faced gentlemen arriving at the office of the city prosecutor. Both men are well known in the building as Doctors Pinault and Boudin. Their reputation precedes them, and they are quickly ushered into the prosecutor's office.
Please come in, do.
Please come in, absolutely. No waiting for you, you're important people.
How do you spell Boudin?
B-O-U-D-I-N.
Ah, Boudin. So yes. Maybe he has a very good supply of Boudin Noir or Boudin Blanc. For the French people, that's fucking funny.
Is it really funny?
It really is. They're going, right, okay. Ah, maybe, c'est bon.
Yeah, I'm going to... No, I don't believe so.
It's black pudding in French, I'm sorry.
Dr. Pinault tells this story of how he has been called in by his colleague, Dr. Boudet, or whatever you say it, Boudin, to consult on a most puzzling case. Dr. Boudin had been caring for a girl named Rosalie Sazarin, who was a servant to a Monsieur Bidard, a very eminent law professor at the City University. Now, unfortunately, despite both doctors' best attempts, the girl had passed away, the girl had died. But what had raised alarm bells with the doctors was that Rosalie's symptoms bore a striking similarity to those of another of Monsieur Boudard's servants, a girl named Rose Tesla, who had also recently died only a couple of weeks prior.
Okay.
Now, they thought these two deaths of a very similar circumstances were... That's something to be questioned. That's a bit unusual.
Yes, young girls dying.
Young, healthy.
Yeah.
Women, they're in service, so they're fit and healthy.
Obviously, I'm basing this on not knowing what happened to them. So if they both died with an axe in their head. That is some cause
for
concern.
There was no axe involved.
Okay, there's no axe in the head.
No axe in the head. But they were suspicious enough that the doctors managed to persuade Rosalie's family that they should carry out an autopsy.
Fair enough.
To find out what is going on, because they think something weird is going on.
Didn't they say that to the vet? Something weird is going on.
That's how they said it. Something weird's going on. We don't know what. We need to cut her open.
Of course, sir. Absolutely.
And they went, yes, absolutely. You're a doctor, most certainly. But they had to confess that they didn't actually find anything. They didn't find the symptoms of poisoning that they were convinced that they were going to find.
Oh.
But they are still so convinced that this is not natural, this is something weird is going on, that they take the effort and go to see the prosecutor and relay this tale.
Okay. I'm suspending my disbelief here, okay?
Why? What's to disbelieve?
Maybe I'm being harsh, but so far nothing has happened.
How shadow.
Someone died, maybe suspiciously.
Two people have died.
Two people have died. There's been an autopsy. They found nothing. But then that, if this podcast proves nothing, that you can't trust the first autopsy. Never trust the first autopsy.
Precisely. Ordinarily, the prosecutor, as Sinead, would have been, no, none of that, utter nonsense, incredibly dubious. This story has no evidence behind it, but these are well-respected and knowledgeable men. They would not go out on a limb like this if they really weren't sure that something was awry. It would do serious damage to their reputation if they go around every case going, oh, it's poison, oh, that's poison, oh, you'll be poisoned. It would do them their professional standing no good.
They wouldn't have lasted long in the prosecutor's office. Is it Mr. Prosecutor? Oh, for God's sake, not these guys again. I swear
not
to God.
Not the poison brothers.
No. Please leave us alone. The person died. They were shot in the face. It was poison, trust me. Oh, God.
But such was the respect afforded to these gentlemen that the prosecutor said, yes, okay, we need to do a bit of looking to see what's going on. So they do just that. They, all three of them, leave the office straight away. They go and they take a trip to Professor Bidard's house to see if they can lay this to rest, ask a few questions, see what's going on. Oh no, they were both ill for ages. There was this common thing. Everyone's got it. Fine. They go and see what they can find out.
Okay.
The door to the professor's house is opened by another of Monsieur Boudard's servants.
Just going to point
what
out.
What now?
You have said Monsieur Professor Boudard's name differently every time you've said it.
Well, that's what his name is. I don't know.
Just really funny. Every time I'm
Shut
like,
out.
What's his name going to sound like this time?
You will never know what his real name is. He has many aliases.
He's
a man of mystery. You never know what you're going to get. They go to his house, and the door is opened by another of the servants, Helen Gigardo. Now, she is a woman of around 40, and is actually, she's described as a scraggy figure.
Nice.
So it's a really complimentary outlook. Scraggy.
Always good, isn't it?
And she guides the three gentlemen into the house to see the professor, and she remains lingering in the doorway while they have their conversation.
Those scraggy people always do, just scuttling around the place.
Scuttling around.
Can I help you at all, sir?
Listening in at the doorway to see what's going on.
Door's not even closed.
We have come, Monsieur Ballard. We have come, Professor, on a rather painful mission. One of your servants has died recently. It is suspected of poisoning. Shock and alarm all around.
Gasp.
From behind them, a voice cries out, I'm innocent! They all turn to stare. Where has this voice come from? The woman in the doorway. Innocent, innocent of what? Says the officer. No one has accused you of anything. But she has made this exclamation of innocence.
Immediately.
immediately. Which everyone finds slightly perplexing.
Oh, that's brilliant. Okay, we're investigating this. It wasn't me!
It wasn't
me! We haven't said anything yet. Stop lingering in the doorway under this gas lamp, pyramiding your fingers and cackling.
Now, this is, they find this a rather strange remark to come from this woman. And they ask, why has she made such a proclamation? And she tries to backtrack and weasel out of it. But they think, no, something weird's going on here. So they actually, there and then, they take her away to the police station for questioning, to find out, well, what the hell are you talking about?
It's probably a good thing to do. If you're investigating something, someone shouted out a confession, going, well, this is very easy.
Yes, it's a very easy case to solve this one. So they take her away. She's in the police station. And while she's being held, they do some digging into her past.
Ooh.
And what they discover is actually rather disconcerting.
Oh, can I just say that I am now picturing her as, have you seen the poster for Nosferatu? It's just that kind of figure with the hands up, like, it wasn't me.
With her fingers about 12 foot long. Yeah. Like,
just that is the picture in my head. And they're just going,
absolutely. We,
there was something that drew us to her as a suspicious character. So, but her past is, oh, she has a past. She's a woman.
She has a
past.
Has a past. And we're going to explore that past now.
Let's.
So she's born in 1803 on a small little farm in Brittany. She was orphaned at the age of 7. Poor her. We are very sad. She is sent to live with two aunts who are servants at the rectory of Boubry. And she stays there for the majority of her childhood in service to the priest and his household. Several years later, she's in her late teens at this point. One of her aunts decides to move on to a different position at a rectory of Seglion. And Helene just travels with her and takes up a job in this new rectory.
Mm-hmm.
One day, another of the servants of the household finds grains of hemp in her soup.
Oh.
That has been prepared by Helene. And she accuses Helene of trying to poison her.
With grains of hemp?
Yes, with the seeds.
Oh,
with the seeds.
Oh. Yes, no, they're quite potent.
Yeah, well, exactly. So she probably got a delightful high out of it as well. But is convinced that Helene is trying to poison her, and she manages to rouse all the other servants to accuse Helene of this act. Now, no one has died or anything at this point, but they find it very suspicious. So she is driven out of the rectory.
Much like Nosferatu was.
Yes, indeed. But this time she goes, I'm moving. She now enters the service of a priest in Gurn. Another rectory. She likes her rectories.
Well, I suppose working for priests is quite
It's quite
easy?
Respectable. Well, I think also it's quite respectable. You've worked in that one. It's probably quite easy to get another job somewhere else.
You can be trusted. It's quite pious work.
Exactly.
It's just very simple. Kind of, it's frugal. You're not going to have a great life as a servant, but
oh, no,
rather
indeed.
Than being abused and shagged by your, well, by your master in the big houses.
Yeah, absolutely. You know it's probably safe and secure. And yeah. And it has a certain amount of respectability about it. She enters service of this priest in Gurn. In the space of 3 months, 7 people in the priest's household have died.
What?
Including the priest himself, his father, his mother, and Helene's own sister, Anna, who had been visiting, along with several other servants, all dead. All of a strange, very similar stomach concerns. There's been all dead.
All dead. So all the people in the house and her sister as well.
Helene's own sister, who had been coming to say hello for
a
bit.
It was an ill-timed visit, wasn't it?
Was a very ill-timed visit, absolutely.
Bloody hell.
All of them die after suffering painful stomach cramps, vomiting, and all of them have eaten food prepared by Helene, and who was the one who had dutifully nursed each of them through their sickness and through their illness. She had been by their bedside tending and caring. Now, I mean, it was said that Helene showed the liveliest sorrow over each of the deaths. Tears flowed freely.
Oh, how convenient.
Incredibly pious in her mourning, and was so convincing that no one would suspect her of anything. She was the most devout, most caring person for these sick people.
Okay, fair enough. How loud was she wailing?
She had a reputation that she could... It actually came up in her trial years and years and years later, that she could turn it on and off like a light switch, as we would say now. So from 1 second, she would be in floods of tears, sobbing, heart-wrenched sobs with big fat tears. And the next minute, she was like, la 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 la
la la la la, skipping down the road.
Having a jolly time.
Yeah, there's something to be said that people find public displays of emotion very unsettling, so they're not just going to push. Absolutely. They're not going to tug at that thread, you know, aside from the fact that people go, oh no, she must be really upset. It's probably, if someone is really going over the top, you're going to go, okay, we don't really want to pursue that. Yeah.
And especially a servant doing this as well.
Yeah, servants are lower class, so they're
meant,
you know,
to be quiet and do their thing and not interrupt the flow of things. The servant is being woefully over the top in her grief.
As are the common folk.
All the deaths in the house are put down to natural causes. What had helped is that 18 months prior to this, there had been an outbreak of cholera nearby.
How convenient.
Now, this was like a year and a half before, but the local doctor said, oh, it must have been remnants of that.
Yeah, if you've got no explanation, then you're going to go...
And as we know, the symptoms are incredibly similar.
There was some cholera in the cupboard. She opened the cupboard. The cholera got out.
It hadn't been open for like 18 months and it was just sitting there.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, with the priest and his household gone, Helene found herself looking for work. She returns to the rectory of Boubli, where she replaces her recently deceased sister as a servant in the house. So okay. She goes back, oh, my dear sister, she worked here, she's dead, I've come to take her place and continue the fine tradition of my family working for you.
I've inherited all of her skills with a duster.
All of her skills. In 3 months, three more people are dead.
Jesus Christ.
Helene's own aunt, Marie-Jean Liscou, is dead. The priest's niece and his own sister, all dead within 3 months of Helene joining the house.
But why?
Why? Well, why not, really?
But why?
The sister was the last to go. She was a healthy girl of 16 years old.
Oh,
she
no.
was dead within 4 days of feeling unwell.
And so no one is then going to Helene going, what food are you preparing and why is everyone dead?
Well, for those last 4 days, she drinks nothing but milk. That has been provided by the ever caring and ever dutiful Helene. As before, Helene is at their bedside throughout, and her grief over the deaths, I mean, it impresses everyone. Everyone is like, oh, that's a lot of grief going on there. She must be, she's very serious about this.
We're getting value for money for the grief.
Oh,
yeah.
They really are. On come the waterworks, and everyone runs to comfort this poor, distraught woman.
She's suffered such tragedy in
her
life. Has. Weirdly, people die wherever she goes. It's so hard for her.
Now, with the demise of most of the rectory, Helene once again finds herself looking for work. She's not thought this through. She keeps killing people. She's going to have to find a job over and over again. But
this is
off
it.
She goes.
She's whatever we're trying to portray her as is like, master poisoner. No one's questioning her. She's killing off her income.
Yeah, absolutely. She's off again. But she has all the experience in working in these priestly environments.
Right.
It does not take her long to find new work. But this time she's not a servant. She's moved up. She is now an apprentice to a needlewoman, to a seamstress in the town.
Very nice. Very impressive.
Now, I'm sure it'll probably be no surprise to anyone that not long after that the widow Le Boucher and her daughter are stricken with an inexplicable and terrible illness.
Oh, for God's sake.
What a surprise. Both soon die.
And she gets all of their needles.
She gets all the thread. And it's like, ha ha ha.
It's good thread.
I will embroider everything.
She's just embroidering while they're dying.
Skull and crossbones on everything.
She's embroidered what she's seen.
Le Boucher's son, Pierre, has also fallen quite ill. But he does not like Helene. They do not get on at all. And he refuses her care and her ministrations whilst he's ill. And he survives.
Telling.
Yes, indeed. Now, I mean, by this time, Helene is... She's rather sensitive and concerned about her reputation. When some of the relatives of Le Boucher come to pay their respects, she confides in one of them, I'm afraid that people will accuse me of all these deaths. She weeps through blubbery tears. Death follows me wherever I go. Yes, yes it does.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does, Nosferatu, leaving corpses in your wake. But they don't sit there and go, I think everyone's going to accuse me of all these murders. Boo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
Woe is me. Now this time, once again, she is out of work and homeless.
Oh dear.
Yet a kindly widow from the town offers her room and board in the house. I know how much you dutifully cared for your past employers. Please come rest. Stay for a while you get yourself sorted out.
The widow was so trusting. She trusted her. She so thought, trusting. Oh, the poor woman. Let me give you shelter. You can eat at my table. Come in.
Helene prepares a lovely, lovely meal.
Oh, fuck.
Delightful meal. Oh, look, she's dead.
Oh, God.
2 days, the widow is dead.
Stop cutting off your bread line, woman. So, I mean, she clearly bitch crazy. But
well, yes, there is that.
Just have room and board.
Now, on the day following the widow's death, her niece has arrived. Now, the distraught Helene throws herself into his arms. I'm so unhappy, she cries. Wherever I go, Seglien, Gyrn, Boobri, Lubashes, people die. Yes, they do,
you crazy bitch.
Yes, they do. And once again, she's on her little way, finding the next place to work and live. Now, at this point, Helene is around 30 years old. She's in her early 30s, and we have got 13 deaths.
In 1850s...
Late 1830s, 1840s, early 1840s now.
News travels a bit, but I guess no one is accusing her. She's moving
absolutely
on, going from place to place. Some people died, she moves on. Some people died. Yep. No one is joining the dots together because they just go, oh, it's a terrible tragedy.
Yep.
And no one is then going... No one's investigating it, so there she
goes. No one's certainly investigating. Now, I think there are rumours circulating. There's gossip.
Gossip. Oh, I love a bit of gossip.
No one is taking these rumours seriously.
And I suppose if it's rectories, it's priests, it's rural-ish,
absolutely,
then
yes,
it's
indeed
not going to be the height of society where people are talking, and it's not going to make the news. It's just, poor people in a rectory.
Yep. These are little rural communities.
Hemp seeds are easy to come by.
Yep. In May of 1835, Helene is now in the service with a Dame Toussaint. While she's in service, 4 more people die.
Oh, fuck it.
the Dame's maid.
What?
Monsieur Toussaint, the Dame's daughter, Julie.
Right.
And later, the Dame herself. And they have all eaten a delicious soup prepared by Helene.
We haven't done soup as a secret ingredient yet.
It did. I did almost go for soup, and I was doing some investigation of what can I make, because it is actually in fact a vegetable soup. So I thought, but then you know what? I cannot bring myself to do a Bloody Mary. I just dislike them that much.
Oh, but I love them.
I know you love them, but I cannot be doing with tomato juice. I find it very upsetting. So Dame Toussaint's son has never liked Helene. We've now had a couple of sons of victims who have, for some reason, innately distrusted. Now, whether they are the ones who are hearing these rumours, perhaps they travel further afield, so they get to hear these
gossip, things like that.
Perhaps on business or doing manly things.
Or maybe they're just less susceptible to the emotions.
Less trusting. Well, absolutely. Yeah. Perhaps they're less persuaded by tears and big bright shiny eyes.
Yeah, if she's not a fox, then you know, then probably not. If you've got blonde curls and a big bosom, then yeah, no, you poor thing, ew, you're a hag.
Well, we know she grows up to be scraggly. Yeah, so the Dame's son has never liked Helene. Nothing can be proven, nothing is firm, but he is not taking any chances, and he sends her packing. He's like, be gone from the house, off you go, I'm not taking any chances. She takes her sorrow and her tears to the next town, the town of Ray, and this time thinking, I cannot work in another household, it's too distressing, too upsetting to see these people die. Right. She finds shelter in the Convent of the Eternal Father. The nuns will help me. I mean, there is nothing unpleasant that has ever happened in a nunnery.
No. Get thee to a nunnery. Oh, God, no. What the fuck is she going to do in the nunnery?
Well, soon slightly bizarre things start to happen in the convent.
Right.
I mean, it seems like the rather strict Orthodox life does not necessarily agree with Helene. I mean, she's worked in rectories and for priests for much of her working life.
Yes, but she's not a nun. She doesn't have to get up and do prayers and self-flagellate.
Exactly.
And drink water and have nothing but rich tea biscuits.
And it starts off with small things that the nuns notice. Linen. Just like normal bed linens start to go missing. They're found a few days later, sort of muddied and trampled in the fields surrounding the convent, as if someone's taken them out there and just like stamped them into the mud.
God, that's weird.
Which is a bit peculiar. And then that progresses to the freshly laundered habits of the nuns. They get returned, but they're slashed. They have knife cuts through their outfits, costumes, uniforms. I don't know what one calls it.
Dress.
They're through them, yeah.
Outfits, costumes. They're just playing dress up. They don't really believe in God.
It's a delightful time, but they're slashed and torn.
Oh, that's weird.
This is like the nunly equivalent of like scratched out faces on photographs.
I don't know which way this is going, but yeah, if she's elected to be in a nunnery and now she's taking stuff and she's then trashing it outside, muddying the sheets and slashing the habits, she's violently acting out before I'm assuming is going to resort to poison.
Well, one day several of the sisters are taken quite unwell. The rest of the nuns there, they pray day and night. They're in the chapel. Helene herself, dutiful, caring, looking out for her new family, attends the ailing sisters as they writhe in agony in their little cots. Their prayers come to nothing. Three of the nuns die horrible deaths, all within about a 48-hour period. Again, people suspect Helene's involvement. Yeah. They think, the Mother Superior there thinks, all this has started since she has joined us here.
Well, yeah, doing it all together.
But again, there's no proof. She's never, ever been found with barrels of arsenic or...
as all those other poisoners were.
Well, yeah, I mean, any sort of poison or anything she shouldn't have.
Yeah, it seems like a reluctance to report her, really.
Potentially.
Because, I mean, you don't need a lot of, as we've seen, you don't need a lot of evidence to convict someone, especially if they're a lower class.
But
you don't need a lot to go on. I'm more fascinated by Helene here, that she's got, there seems to be something about religion with her.
Well, that is an interesting point, actually, because that has been her major employment.
Yeah.
And she seems to have sought out those environments over her career as a servant.
Yeah, she's worked for priests, she's worked for men, she's targeted a lot of women. Men don't trust her, but she's seeking out this kind of environment. Mm. And now she's in a convent which is purely women, and she is acting out and slashing the habits of people who are there to care. And then she's portraying herself as the most caring, the most wrought and fraught person. Yeah, there's something weird going on about religion there. There's something very strange about care and that.
And that sort of
and
thing.
And that. I'll articulate that better later on, but still.
But there are these suspicions and these concerns. Hmm. I mean, they realise that, well, she's the one who's been working in the kitchens recently. She's one being preparing these meals. And they're not completely deaf to the rumours that are creeping in from the outside world about her. But obviously their whole mission is to look for the best in people and not to take their people's previous sins and hold them against them. They've got to...
I think it's fine if people are fucking dying in your convent.
Exactly so. I mean, there's no evidence, so they can't do anything formal. They agree that it's probably best if she leaves. Probably best if you go and perhaps find a home elsewhere.
She wasn't expelled, she was just asked to leave.
By mutual agreement.
Yes.
So off she leaves. She's never long without a job. Next is another apprenticeship to another seamstress, and then another dead mistress. My masters die wherever I go, she cries to the niece of the deceased seamstress before she leaves to find her next home.
Right.
Next job is back in Auray again, the same town as the convent. She is a maid this time to Madame Hattel. The job lasts no more than a week. Her new mistress's son-in-law has heard the story of why Helene left the convent, and she is swiftly shown the door.
Oh, thank God.
Ah, though not before Madame Hattel has sampled some of the delicious, delicious cooked meats prepared
by Helene.
She dies the day after Helene's departure.
this is just stupid now. This is just mental. This is to the point where I'm getting fed up with Helene. What is wrong with everyone? This is more deaths I think we've dealt with ever. For episode 50, it's like the Family Guy episode. Can we get to 100 deaths? We're literally getting nearly to that point.
We're heading there.
Good God. Good God, woman. Why will no one listen to reason? I'm getting angry.
Well, she keeps moving on. I mean, her reputation in Auray is now
she
is shot.
She went back to Auray, though. She went back there.
She went back, but now there is no chance of finding another job now. So she takes herself off to a town called Pontivy, and she gets a job as a cook.
Right. Okay, no.
Probably
no.
Not the best.
Fine. Okay, come into my house and cook stuff. Where did you come from before? Do you have any references? Doesn't matter, mate. Okay, it's fine. Come in.
Well, I've worked for this priest and that rectory and this rectory. Then I was at the convent for a while.
And you've got to wait for a while until the letters arrive back saying he did.
Come on in.
Help yourself. Help yourself to my supply of food and my children.
2 months later, the 14-year-old son is dead.
God. No!
After a very brief sickness marked by vomiting convulsions. Now, this time, an autopsy is immediately carried out. This is a young boy. Now, when they carry out this autopsy, they find an inflamed stomach. They find corrosion in the windpipe and the intestines. And they think something must be wrong. Now, say, ordinarily, this would have been cause for alarm. But strangely, apparently this boy has been known... has a reputation to drink vinegar neat.
What?
Just glasses of vinegar.
No. Okay, no to all of this.
No to all of this.
No to drinking vinegar. Okay, anyone who is I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna say it online, and I don't care if you yell at me. Don't be drinking apple cider vinegar neat, people. Does shit all to your body. And everything. Apple cider vinegar is great for topical treatments. Fucking ask me on Instagram. I don't mind. Don't be drinking vinegar neat. And also, it's the 1850s or whatever. How are you going to get your kicks from drinking vinegar? Because this wellness shit didn't happen back then. Why is he drinking vinegar?
He has this reputation. He is well known to enjoy a glass of vinegar.
Is it like the 1800s equivalent of the cinnamon challenge?
maybe so.
He's just known as the village idiot who was just, I will drink vinegar for a tuppence.
Perhaps he was in fact the village idiot, and people were just paying him coins to do these stupid things.
Was he the guy who started the vinegar drinking craze of like, it just cleanses the body and the colon, or he was just drinking vinegar because it was the closest thing to alcohol that he could get and he thought he'd get drunk?
He's 14 years old, so I don't know if getting drunk was his main goal.
Well, yeah, actually, that's a good point. Back he's in France, wine from five.
Well, exactly. It's probably like red wine vinegar or something, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. He wanted a stronger kick. That Merlot was too jammy.
all of the damage to his insides was put down to this habit he had, rather than anything suspicious. Helene, though, she seems distraught at the death of the boy. She is fighting back the tears. She cannot possibly continue to work here anymore. It is just too upsetting. The memories that I've formed over these past, what, 3 or 4 days? She's been there for a few months. But she found it too painful to continue working in the household.
I'm going to take all his vinegar with me to remember him by. Right, that kid is mental and...
Yeah, no argument there.
Right.
Next place, she is with a Monsieur Kerillac.
Oh, is he dead too?
In Hennebont. Now, Monsieur Kerillac is recovering from a fever, from a long-term illness. He needs someone to look after him. Helene, possibly not the best choice of nursemaid. After a delightful meal provided by Helene, he has an instant relapse.
Yep.
Followed by repeated and fierce vomiting that kills him in 5 days.
Okay, fine. own fault.
Next is the house of Dame Veron, dead after a sudden and violent sickness.
Yep, there we go.
We're now in 1839. Helene is 36 and we've reached 25.
Fucking
25 deaths so far.
I mean, it's an accomplishment.
I mean, it truly is.
It's a bit like
impressive.
Us with like episode 50. Like, we did not think this would last this long. We are shocked that it got this far.
Now, possibly in mind of that, there are a few quiet years now with no suspected deaths, no reported deaths, but there's a fair amount of theft. She is caught stealing numerous times from her employees and is dismissed and on her way. She seems to have given up the death and
it's
focused
too easy,
on the,
apparently.
Yeah, focused on the shiny things that she can sell for some cash.
So she's got a compulsive disorder. This is clearly some sort of compulsion. She has not been caught. Does sort of feel like she's doing it for attention or whatever, and then it's like, fine, I'll do something else. I'll steal. That gives me the thrill.
I'll start stealing. Yeah. Each time, again, suspected, reprimanded, she moves on to the next town. By 1848, Helene has arrived in the city of Rennes. Now, after already having been dismissed from several houses for theft, she finds herself in the employment of Monsieur and Madame Rabot. After a few months, Monsieur Rabot begins to notice a considerable reduction in his wine cellar. These bottles of wine, they're going down a bit more rapidly than I was expecting.
That's my excuse every week. Theft. Theft.
Helene is confronted by this, with this fact of why have I got a lot less wine than I had before you started? She protests her innocence.
While clinking.
Well, when that does not work, she weeps with remorse and promises never, ever, ever to do it again. Monsieur Rabot says, no, absolutely not. Never. Off you go. Be gone. But Madame Rabot, she's a bit more caring. This woman is so upset. She's distraught. She would never do it again. I tell you what, you can have 10 days notice. We'll pay you for 10 days. Give you a bit of time to see if you can sort yourself another position, and then you have to go. This was a very, 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 very bad decision, Madame Rabot. The next day, Monsieur and Madame Rabot are both struck down with debilitating stomach cramps. Rabot's mother-in-law comes to visit. She too is struck down after eating a meal prepared by Helene. Helene departs after this notice period, leaving her employers bedridden, but still alive, and without Helene's further ministrations, they do recover. But Monsieur Rabot is left paralysed for 6 months.
Oh, God.
After this encounter. In Helene's next job, it's not long again before the dwindling liquor stock gets noticed, and she is reprimanded for stealing. 2 days later, the couple's young son dies suddenly.
Oh, no.
Again, Helene, distraught, weeping, mourning, declares that she could not possibly continue working in a place where such a tragedy has occurred.
Mm.
I'm going. I'm off.
Convenient.
Convenient.
Yeah, the employers would surely be going, yeah, and our liquor is gone. Where the fuck are you going?
But they were probably thinking, well, we were going to get rid of her anyway. So she's decided to take it on upon herself to go. Fine. Off you go. I've got more important things. My son has just died.
Yeah, there it is.
Her next job takes her into the employment of Professor Bidard, who we met previously. Right at the beginning of the story.
At the beginning of the story.
If you can remember that far back. And as we know, what happens with that employment, it leads to her arrest by the chief prosecutor of Rennes. Under questioning. In fact, before being asked any questions, she denies all knowledge of poison. I don't know anything about arsenic. I don't know what it is. No witness can say I had any.
It's been 40 years. No one has asked you about anything. Now is the time you decide to confess? Maybe she really wants to confess. Maybe that's it.
And I mean, it is true that she has never been caught with any arsenic. When she says...
Oh, is it arsenic?
It is.
Arsenic alarm! Arsenic alarm!
It is indeed arsenic. But it's only... known it's arsenic because of her proclamation at this time. I don't know anything about arsenic, she says. No one has accused her of poisoning anyone with arsenic.
What's your name? I don't know anything about arsenic. Okay, where do you live? Arsenic? Never heard of it, my friend.
It's pretty much exactly like that. And when she says no witness can say I ever had any, it is true. She has never been caught with arsenic. No one can prove that she's ever bought any. But as we know, arsenic is prevalent in every home. It's in the kitchen cupboards as rat poison and any sort of pest control. It is not at all difficult to get your hands on. Through this trail of destruction and reports of death that they discover that have followed Helene's travels throughout France, they have now been well documented by the prosecutor. And there is no way that this can be put down to sheer coincidence and bad fortune.
Oh, yeah.
In the written documents that the prosecutor put forward to the judge, it shows that they aim to try Helene for 26 poisonings, 9 attempted poisonings, and 17 thefts. Whoa. Was what they thought we can accurately prosecute this.
We'll underestimate. We'll be conservative. We'll just do her for the 20 odd poisonings and the 17 thefts.
I mean, there
we'll
were
just play it down.
There were two children that they decided we're not going to try that because it would be probably too upsetting for the family to dig all that up. So they said, well, we've got her on enough, so we're not going to drag them through that. So there were many more. Later reports estimate that it could have been anywhere between sort of like 30 to 60. No one really knows the exact number. But interestingly, when she came to be on trial, the statute of limitations in Rouen at that time is only 10 years. Oh. So she cannot be tried for anything prior
before
that. So she's got away with a hell of a lot.
That's not uncommon in some of the trials we've seen, because you usually only get tried for the one or two is enough.
This is
concrete evidence, and there may have been 40, but you go, these are the two that we're going to try you for.
Yeah, these are the two we're confident with. So in the end, Helene actually stands trial for 11 thefts, 6 attempted poisonings, but only 3 poisonings.
Yeah.
I mean, 3 is plenty out of the numbers. Yeah, that's what they go for. We can confidently prove these. Those recent victims are exhumed, and under a more detailed autopsy with more competent, dare I say, doctors from the big city who know what they're looking for. These are not rural little village doctors.
Big hats.
They've got incredibly large hats and very, very big stethoscopes.
So big.
And they find huge quantities of arsenic. And what they also believe is probably antimony.
Ooh,
so a combination of the two.
Oh, very interesting.
Antimony for the more long term. I'm here for a couple of months.
Yeah.
Let's stretch it out. I need to be out of here tomorrow. Let's get on with the arsenic.
Tip that over the edge. Very nice. Very nice, clever girl.
In court, Helene's behaviour veers between humble, devout mutterings, tears streaming down the face, to loud, pious shouting about how she's innocent, that only God knows the truth, onto then furious outbursts about how she has been mistreated all her life. She lists all her grievances with her employees. Every time that someone has said a vaguely unpleasant thing about her, she's locked away. She's remembered all these things that anyone has ever said to her that she's taken in the slightly wrong way. And then she goes back to inconsolable weeping again. The judges of the court are merciless. Time and time again. Where did you get the poison from? Where did you get the poison from? Time and time again, she goes, I don't know anything of poison, and God willing, I never will. She sticks to this defence of, I don't know anything about this. Dozens of witnesses appear for the prosecution. They have come from across France, from all the towns that have been affected by her rampage, from all the families who have suffered at her hands. Helene claims to have not known or ever set eyes upon any of them. The majority of them are able to provide quite detailed accounts, tales of theft and arguments between Helene and her various employers just before their relatives died and Helene left for pastures new. Her defence lawyer makes quite a remarkable closing speech. I mean, obviously, he is not hopeful for an innocent verdict at this point. He thinks that's probably quite likely off the cards. But he actually argues that due to the severity and severeness of her crimes, she obviously needs a lot more time than most to repent for her sins. Therefore, she should be spared the death penalty to give her this time find forgiveness.
Okay, interesting.
Which
interesting.
Has a strange logic behind it.
Yes.
It does not work. Helene is sentenced to death by guillotine and executed in front of a crowd of thousands in the city square, February 26th, 1852. It is the story of the craziest woman, of Helene Jugado, murderer of many, people say up to potentially into the 60s. Considerably high on the bastardometer, which we must bring back.
Wow, what a story.
That's a long story, that one.
Well, the thing is, it's probably the most detailed that we've had. It's great for episode 50, where we can trace back. She was there, they died. Then she was there, they died. They were there, they died. And no one did anything, no one stopped her. And it does seem like, as you said, that this is not just a retrospective, let's just assign any old death that happened anywhere in the vicinity to her. She obviously went and worked for these people,
these
and
are
there are records
links.
Of it.
Yep,
and she was just poisoning and robbing and doing whatever she wanted for so long.
Yeah.
before she was caught, before two guys went, okay, there's some sort of similarity here.
Yeah.
Why did no one report it? Why did no one say anything?
Well, I think potentially because she seemed to do such a potentially a thorough job. It was households that went, that she did away with. You're getting rid of anyone who's going to give evidence against you.
Almost. Oh, that's a very good point. Yeah.
So you're getting rid of a father, mother and two kids. You've got rid of all of them.
Mm.
Then there might be a couple of servants around, but who's going to believe them? Who else is... There are no other witnesses to a lot of this stuff.
It seems crazy to us these days to think, how did no one tell someone? Okay, obviously we know there was no anything of technology, but you would think that someone would talk. But you're absolutely right. If people are being killed off in the family and then she moves town, it's very easy to move town. Who knows if she was using the same name?
I mean, it seems to be that she's certainly using the name Helene, because that's what comes up in the record. So I think she is.
It's not an uncommon name, though, is it?
There are these rumours and gossip that does seem to follow her along, that these incidents have happened.
There's also the idea that people are trusting, and like, it's like we've said before, and like you and I often argue about, you know, oh, if you've got stomach pains, you always say, oh, you're not going to think to poison. I'm going to be like, yes, absolutely think of poison. you know, there are the type of people who, if you're going to hire someone to work in your house, you're going to do rigorous checks, find out everything about this person to make sure they're not a lunatic. And other people who just go, oh, help yourself. Just come in. People who get duped. And if that can happen these days, think about what happens back then. There's no way of questioning anyone.
Well, exactly. There's no way of finding out. I mean, people may bring a letter of reference or something like that.
That could be forged.
But also, I think you'll often find that she's going in as a servant, a relatively low position in a household.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the master of the house that's giving her this job.
True,
It's going to be the head servant who is employing these people.
And she could be cheap.
Yeah, really cheap. And probably the master or mistress of the house is 90% unaware of who these people are. It's beneath them. Watch Downton Abbey.
Which you have been rewatching lately.
Which I absolutely love Downton Abbey.
It's a crazy, crazy world. And there's definitely something with her in the early life about what is with her and religion. And that episode
I hadn't picked up on that, but that was a really good point.
But it's just, it seems like definitely some sort of psychotic compulsion there. And again, I'm saying this as not a psychologist and not understanding any of that. But yeah, that she's been working in rectory, she's working with priests. The fact that she goes into a convent willingly, knowing that it's not going to be a pleasant life, and just goes in and messes with them, doesn't poison them immediately.
No, she seems to build up.
Yeah,
for that.
Just wants to destroy and to do something, to act out. It does really seem like she's acting out, and you can imagine that if she's not getting caught, if she's being too good at it, it's almost like she's crying for attention, and then stealing will give her a new thrill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know what she went through. I mean, we sort of pick up her tale. Yes, we know she was orphaned and she went to live at this rectory.
Mm.
But the first we really know much about her was she's in her late teens, sort of 20s, when she starts her sort of her killing spree sort of thing. We don't know what happened to her, if there's something there that caused this resentment or anger towards these characters, which there may well have been.
But sometimes you just don't know. You can have all of the history of people, even very recently. We mentioned it on Patreon, and we mentioned it last week as well, I think, about Harold Shipman, who is a character where we know everything about him because it happened in a lifetime and we can research it. But there's still a bit of, we don't really know. We can theorise and we can think, maybe it was this, maybe it was that. With her, it could have been this, could have been that, but she just killed a shitload of people. Wow. Oh, that is that's a chilling one for episode 50. What was going through her mind? What do you think, people? Do you know this story? Do you have theories about it? Would you suspect a maid who comes to your house and just with a handwritten, quill-written letter, would you take them in and offer them shelter?
From a priest.
From a priest in particular.
Yeah, not just any old letter, a priestly letter.
You know what? If someone comes to your door with a letter written by a priest, don't take them in. Just don't. No, don't. Don't do it.
I think it is generally frowned upon these days.
I know. We can teach you much on this show. So, yeah, if you whatever your thoughts are about this story, tell us about them in the comments on social media. Tell us about the episode notes. Later on today, there will be the delicious recipe for the tears of joy.
There will indeed. And I would heartily recommend you give it a go. Make up some cinnamon syrup if you haven't got it.
Mm.
It's not difficult to make. I'll put the recipe for that as well out, just the method of making that. Definitely give it a go. It's a really tasty drink. I may have another one.
But also shout out to Lizzie Harris, who messaged us this week on Instagram. And bless you, Lizzie. She is an NHS worker. She works in a hospital. Thank you so much for looking after us and protecting us during the pandemic. But she said in a roundabout way that she had been left at the park and ride stop. Someone had left cake and a card for the NHS workers, but she saw it and thought, oh, and then she thought immediately suspicious because she thought, why are people leaving cake? It's probably poisoned, like Christiana Edmonds. So I'm glad that this podcast has ruined your ability to enjoy stranger cake.
Yeah, so I don't think you should be proud of this, Sinead. That was your episode and you've obviously ruined the people's ability to enjoy random chocolates they find on the street.
Exactly,
I'm ashamed of yourself.
I'm very sorry if any time anyone has received a random gift from friends or family and you've just had a moment of thought of why but just enjoy the cake, see what happens. It's fine. If you haven't found us on Patreon already, come and join the fun. Lots of extra episodes on there. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your enemies, tell them all about the poisonous cabinet and let them make up their own goddamn minds.
Quite right.
Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisonous cabinet. We will see you next week, and remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.